Welcome to today's podcast. We're heading into February 2026, and a courtroom is about to decide who in England and Wales is truly allowed to carry out litigation. You might think, isn't that obvious? Only qualified legal professionals, right? Well, not so fast. The appeal in Julia Mazur and others v. Charles Russell Speechleys, now top of the lawyers' top 10 appeals of 2026, dives straight into the murky waters of what authorised means under the Legal Services Act. Let me tell you, this isn't just a technical squabble. It's a case with the potential to reshape who gets to stand up and argue your case in court. Moreover, it could potentially redefine the way legal practices operate. The Law Society, through Russell Cook, is defending the current boundaries. On the other side, you've got Silex, the Chartered Institute of Legal Executives, championing the right for legal executives and others to have their litigation roles formally recognised. At the heart of the matter is professional authorisation, a legal term, meaning you've got official permission to do certain work. But here's the twist. What happens when that line isn't clear? When paralegals or trainees take on more responsibility? Stay with me, because by the end of this episode, you'll see why this case is a watershed moment and what's at stake for everyone working in or using the legal system. So, what led us here? Let's unravel the background before we dive into the big arguments. Let's start with the Legal Services Act of 2007. You might hear the term reserved legal activities thrown around a technical reference to specific regulated tasks, like conducting litigation or exercising rights of audience in court. Think of it like a driver's license. Not everyone on the road can drive a bus, only those with the right credentials. But what exactly does authorised person mean? In legalese, it's someone who's passed the regulatory hurdles set out by their professional body and is formally recognised to practice in a particular area. Now, you might be wondering, why is this distinction so important? Well, if someone acts outside their authorization, not only could they jeopardize their client's case, but they could also face regulatory sanctions, sort of like driving without insurance, but with much higher stakes. The High Court ruled that only these authorized persons can conduct litigation. But does that exclude legal executives, trainees, or paralegals from crucial legal work? That's where our story heats up. Let's consider the conflict this has created in real-world practice and what the consequences could be if the lines remain blurred. In the original High Court decision, Mr. Justice Sheldon took what many see as a strict approach. Only authorised persons, typically solicitors and barristers, can conduct litigation, according to his reading of the statute. This setup was meant to protect clients from unqualified practitioners, kind of like ensuring only certified pilots fly your plane. But here's the conflict. Legal executives, who are highly qualified under the arm of the Chartered Institute of Legal Executives, often handle litigation tasks. Are they truly outsiders to the process? It's a real-world problem, not just academic hair-splitting. Now, trainees and paralegals work under supervision all the time. You might ask, aren't their contributions vital to how law firms operate? The answer is a resounding yes, but does the law give them enough cover to work confidently? The judgment risks freezing the flexibility that firms rely on. So the appeal is about more than just job titles. It's about the future pipeline of legal talent and the accessibility of legal services for the public. So what arguments are being put forward in this high-stakes appeal? Silex, representing thousands of legal executives, is spearheading the appeal. Their argument? That the High Court's interpretation is too restrictive, shutting out professionals who've trained, tested, and delivered for years. Picture a hospital. Should only consultants treat patients, or can senior nurses and physician associates take the lead where appropriate? Silex's position draws on statutory interpretation, the technical process of reading laws in light of their purpose. Their case: the Legal Services Act was never meant to create rigid silos, but to protect quality and trust, regardless of professional label. Now, you may be thinking, doesn't that risk standards slipping? Silex counters with data. Legal executives have similar complaint rates and indemnity insurance claims as solicitors. They're not the weaker link. But the challenge is real. If the definition stays narrow, some firms could see work bottlenecked through a handful of qualified people, increasing costs and wait times for clients. That's the crux of their conflict, the need for modernisation versus the imperative to protect the public. Will the Court of Appeal buy it? The answer could transform the career paths of thousands. On the other side, the Law Society, represented by Russell Cook and heavyweight counsel Richard Coleman KC, argues the boundaries must stay firm. They're set up. Not everyone with legal training is ready to represent clients through the minefield of litigation. Let's unpack two legal concepts. Regulatory delegation. The idea that only those holding express authorization can carry out reserved activities and public interest. The Law Society warns, dilute the rules and you risk eroding both professional accountability and consumer confidence. Now you might ask, aren't paralegals and trainees already working under supervision? Yes, but the Society's point is that ultimate responsibility and liability shouldn't be diffuse. They cite international comparisons. In Australia and Canada, only fully qualified lawyers conduct litigation. Why risk a system that works, they ask. But even the Law Society faces a dilemma: how to balance safeguarding quality with the need for a modern, flexible legal workforce. That's the subtle resolution they're gunning for. Let's pick a scenario. Meet Sam, a competent paralegal who drafts documents, files, claims, and does the heavy lifting all under a solicitor's watchful and approving eye. Under the current High Court ruling, Sam's day-to-day suddenly fall into a regulatory grey zone. Here's the technical snag: delegation of authority. While solicitors can delegate, the statute arguably says only an authorised person may actually conduct litigation. That leaves trainees and paralegals in limbo. Consider this conflict. Law firms depend on these team members to keep cases moving, but they can't expose themselves or their clients to regulatory risk. Hypothetically, if the appeal fails, you could see a chilling effect: firms become ultra-cautious, limiting personnel involved, and ironically, harming the next generation's development. So, the appeal's outcome could either unlock opportunity or slam the door. How should the law adapt to the evolving reality of legal practice? Now, let's pivot. Julia Mazur represents ordinary people navigating the justice system. Here's where access to justice and regulatory protection collide. The technical term in play is reserved legal activity, but the real-life issue is simple. If the rules are too strict, fewer people can afford representation. If too loose, the risk of poor advice rises. Imagine you're on a tight budget. Would you rather have the help of a trained paralegal or no help at all? That's the dilemma many face. Now, some say, but there are alternative business structures and unbundled services. True, but the heart of the conflict is about trust and competence, not just cost. So, what solution will serve both the profession and the public best? That's the million-pound question this appeal is wrestling with. Let's zoom out and ask, is England and Wales unique in this legal tug of war? Actually, no. In the United States, for example, unauthorised practice of law is a hot-button issue, with each state drawing its line differently. Some allow trained legal paraprofessionals to appear in certain courts. Canada and Australia generally reserve litigation to lawyers, but both have pilot schemes for paralegal involvement in family or small claims matters. Now, the technical term here is scope of practice, how much a case worker can do. When the boundaries are too tight, legal deserts form, too loose, and the risk of malpractice rises. So, you might ask, is there a golden mean? Comparative data suggests that tightly regulated, supervised practice rather than outright exclusion or open season best serves both access and quality. Can the Court of Appeal craft a nuanced solution, learning from global peers? We'll soon find out. What's at stake if the appeal swings one way or the other? For law firms, it's about business models. Can they continue to harness the skills of junior staff, or will the cost of compliance rocket? For clients, this is a question of cost effectiveness and access. If only the most senior, expensive lawyers can carry out vital work, legal fees could soar, pricing out many. Now, let's talk about careers. If you're a legal executive, a paralegal, or a trainee, the outcome here could define your future. Will your pathway be open, or will it narrow to a bottleneck? The technical concept regulatory chill comes into play, the phenomenon where overstrict rules sap innovation and diversity from the profession. Ultimately, a balanced judgment could unlock both opportunity and security. But can the court thread that needle? Let's look ahead. Whether the appeal succeeds or fails, it's already sparked debate over the future of legal regulation. There's a growing call for the Legal Services Act to be updated to reflect modern practice, a process sometimes called regulatory realignment. Think about it. The profession needs rules that are clear, fair, and fit for purpose. But society also expects accountability and high standards. That's the real balancing act. Now, you might be thinking, isn't this just lawyers protecting their turf? It's more complex. The integrity of legal outcomes and public faith in the system hinges on getting this right. Innovation is another technical term worth mentioning. With AI, new business models, and remote working, the boundaries of legal work are shifting faster than ever. Parliament to step in? Time will tell. To wrap up, Mazza v. Charles Russell Speechless isn't just an arcane legal spat. It's a test case for how the legal profession adapts to modern demands, balances tradition with innovation, and serves the public. We've covered technical terms like reserved legal activity and regulatory delegation, but at its core, the case is about people, clients needing affordable help, professionals wanting fulfilling careers, and a justice system that works. Now, you might ask, what should change? That's for the judges and maybe lawmakers to decide. But the debate itself signals an evolving profession, wrestling with real-world challenges. Let me leave you with this. Whatever the outcome, Mazur will shape the future of legal work, access to justice, and public confidence for years to come. So, next time you hear about authorised persons, remember, behind every legal definition, there's a human story and a society, depending on getting it right. Thanks for listening.